suggest that we begin to consider the world as we have now presented it as a spectacle of very rich enjoyment.
Thank you very much, sir.
And last for the Halloween edition of the Acoustic Update, this from the October 20th, 1988, Austin, Texas, American Statesman, and under the title, Apaches Want Geronimo's Skull Back, Bush's Father Took It, Leader Claims. The article quotes from a 1933 Yale University Skull and Bones History of Our Order, describing how a group of Skull and Bones men, led by Prescott Bush, George Rush's father, raided Geronimo's tomb at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, stealing the Apache chieftain's skull for display at Skull and Bones headquarters at Yale. When tribal leaders attempted to recover the skull from Skull and Bones after a series of meetings in 1986, they were contacted by a lawyer for the secret society and Jonathan Bush, the vice president's brother. Bush and the attorney attempted to hand over a skull, but the Apache leaders refused to accept it, realizing that the skull was not the one previously on display in the Skull and Bones tomb. The matter remains in limbo as Geronimo's heirs press Representative Mo Udall of Arizona to conduct an investigation.
As Buckminster Fuller said, the human race always does the smartest thing after it's exhausted all the stupid alternatives.
Super angelic people subsume the whole universe, all right? So that means that the solar system, our immediate solar system, becomes the area of human scale. That's why the X's showed up in the last couple of years, because now they're ready to deal with us and us with them on a human scale. That's really the solar government situation. But because of the solar government situation is human scale, then that means we have... on the planet, which is a tiny neighborhood like in the 60s, like the neighborhoods of the 60s, all the community groups that sprung up and was organized and got grants in the late 60s, early 70s in North America, and in the West, let's say. What's going to be community projects for the planet, the tiny planet in the solar human scale level? It's going to be world government. It's going to be clean up your neighborhood. That's eco-fascism.
And this is KBFK Los Angeles, and we've just been listening to a tape with Marshall McLuhan and Edwin Newman from around 1971. And the title of this was The Message of the Medium, Marshall McLuhan, Theories of Communication. And then we heard a cut from an album called Bob's Media Ecology, Hand Signals for the Blind. And that particular cut was called The Solar Government Global Theme. And now, as advertised in the LA Weekly's radio hits this week, we have with us this morning Bob Dobbs. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Dave.
You can hear me good.
Yes.
You know, this is interesting. I understand you were on WBAI recently for about 2 hours.
Unannounced.
Whoops. Well, there goes the booklet. It's an escape artist CD. What was the general tenor of this program?
Well, it's Bob Bass's show. It's called Radio Unnameable. And he patches in callers and has callers talking back and forth. And this was about three Thursdays ago. And I was passing through New York, and I heard it. And Paul Krasner's book just came out, Ravings of an Unconfined Nut.
Yeah.
And he mentions a lot about... Mae Brussel, and I knew Mae Brussel was a good friend of Bob Bass's, so I thought I'd call him up and just talk to him about Mae Brussel.
Well, before you go on, I forgot to say, this is KPFK Los Angeles, in case any of my listeners were wondering. So now that we've done that, we can go on with the interview.
Yeah, so I started talking to him anonymously about Mae Brussel and Paul Krasner, and then one thing led to another, and then I started spewing out some Bob dogma. And then some callers got interested, and so I stayed on the line and started dialoguing with other callers who were responding to things I'd said to Bob Bass. And that went on for a couple hours. And if anybody heard it, they might have recognized it was the personage on Bob's Media Ecology, or maybe they didn't. But I didn't go into it too much. But at the end of the show, I mentioned Fatted Communion with Bob Dobbs, for anyone who had been listening and was interested.
Yeah, we had a couple of requests about information about that book the last time you were on. Well, tell us what insights you've come across in the last 2 months or so.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I do have a few things I want to mention. One backlog thing is that we talked about Finnegan's Wake last week at the beginning of the show and mentioned how Finnegan as an individual person called Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker, who was dreaming. When he wakes out of the dream, his name is Mr. Porter. Remember we mentioned that?
Yes.
Well, we forgot to add that his son's names are Kevin and Jerry, and it's Jerry who created the possibility for this show. So there's a link there between Porter and Jerry, which you would celebrate.
Sometimes I wonder if this entire program in existence isn't something out of Finnegan's Wake.
That's right, and I'm wondering when Kevin will show up. Who that would be?
I knew a Kevin when I was a kid.
Had on or connected to a Kevin?
No, not for about 35 years.
Okay.
But, well, anyway.
Okay, here are some insights.
What are these insights?
Maybe this will stimulate some calls.
Yeah, we'll be taking, let me announce now, we'll be taking calls in a few minutes, and you can call in and talk to Bob at 818-985-5735 or 818-985-KPFK.
Since insights are our daily business, people process insights every day in the electric environment, I like to prefer to call what I offer percepts rather than concepts. You know, incepts can be on one end of the range as conceptual, interior, mental ideas, or they can be on the other end total sensory responses. I like to operate in the interval between concepts and percepts. But I'll begin with this percept, that to define media ecology itself, it means, as a Tetrad manager in the Secret Council of Ten, it means that we operate with the principle that the crime must fit the punishment. So you get a certain amount of punishment that must be dished out, so the crime has to fit the severity of that punishment. You see what I'm saying? So on one level, if we need a lot of punishment for young people, we will charge them and arrest them for possession of drugs and give them 30 years. If we need that kind of punishment in the Tetrad management. On another level, if we, and this seems unjust, but I'll explain that in a minute. And then on another level, when we have executives which people perceive as doing incredible expensive white-collar crimes, they get 6 months at Club Fed. All right? The crime must fit the punishment. It depends
or they get
on what
pardoned.
The punishment needs to be. If the punishment for young people isn't too extreme, then the crime will be measured on a small scale. But a recent example of the crime fitting the punishment, because the L.A. cops in the L.A. retrial in April were found guilty, then in Tetrad management I have to deal with so many audiences in the Global Theater, I had to compensate for the exasperation of those who identified with the cops and felt they get a raw deal. So we had to siphon off that frustrated energy, which is very intense in the electrified consciousness at discarded electric speeds of light. In other words, they're not just in their bodies. And so we compensated that with the outrageous bombing of Waco, Texas, which came just a few days later. And that's the example of the crime must fit the punishment. Those two crimes have that relationship. You get what I'm saying, Dave?
Yeah, but I don't think some of our listeners understand what you mean by Tetrad management.
That's... Let's take that as a question later.
Okay.
Okay. So that's one percept that I have to deal with. Another example, since this is the anniversary, 30 years ago, the JFK assassination was an example of the crime must fit the punishment, where the power of the presidential office was being inflated such in the early TV period that we on the Secret Council of Ten had to sort of sacrifice him like an ancient ritual out of Mr. Fraser's Golden Bough Encyclopedia, to siphon off the effects that that image was having in relation to other power groups in the United States and the multinational corporate world of that time. All right, now, the second thing is that many emphasize now that the Earth is alive, or that nature is alive, or bacteria is alive, as Lynn Margulis and James Lovelock emphasized in their Gaia hypothesis. Part of the job of my publicizing media ecology is to emphasize that television itself is alive. The electric environment is alive. And it's not an angelic standing wave, but a resonating super angel. So I think the Greenpeace has to take that into consideration, that to revitalize nature, we have to not only recognize that it is alive, but that also our man-made artifacts are alive. The next point I want to make is the floating effect of the viewers and users of television and computers and telephones and satellites, the discarnate effect could be called the floating effect, creates people who naturally want to float through all institutions, situations, and experiences. No blockages, just a continuous floating sensation. And that's why you have the obsession with astral projection, medical welfare, and conceptual theories or insights. They want mental floating. So that's another percept. The next one is, especially for the audience of KPFK, but it applies to everybody, is that all reform programs fail. That means any attempt to institutionalize a new paradigm, a new situation, a new way of operating in any kind of institution fails because for this reason. In the case of KPFK, progressives don't have a chance because in the electric mood mud, goals and reform targets cannot keep up with the mood changes that the users of the electric mood mud go through. So any goals and reform targets that are established within 6 months are obsolete in terms of the global theater's audience is focused on something else. Something new comes up as an issue. And that's inevitable when the whole world lives at the speed of light or beyond the speed of light.
Well, you know,
Just to finish that. So, however, conservative pro-life and no taxes reform images are favored. And I just want to show you why the conservative image is in a hopeless situation where even the conservative programs, reform programs, from their point of view, won't work. The reason they are favored in the mood mud is because they enhance electric autonomy, which is the hidden bias of the electronic user, versus state and mass-imposed programs. So that's the problem that progressives have to become aware of, is how to battle the inherent bias in the electric environment to favor the illusory programs of the conservatives.
I was just going to say that the McLuhan tape with Edmund Newman was talking about how Cromwell, after he'd overthrown the king, he had scrapped monarchy, but he hadn't been prepared for the concept of the royal martyr that came on after that.
Yeah, that's a really good pattern that Marshall noticed. Yeah, that's relevant to what I'm talking about. That's 400 years ago, so it's puny compared to the problems of tetrad management today, but maybe I should mention tetrad management now. Tetrad management means from the position of myself in the Secret Council of Ten, I have to recognize that the man-made nature of literature, newspapers, books, radio, television, computer, satellite, bulldozers, steel, bridges, any artifact made by humanity has a life of its own. Yet when new artifacts are invented, it affects the life of artifacts that have been previously existing. So a cliche is that people worry that Johnny can't read because he's being absorbed and influenced by the electric environment more than the literate environment. That's just one puny instance of the interplay of mixed corporate media. And as a manager of that, I have to take into consideration how each medium has an audience, has a bias, and it's affected and affects other media, and that's how you orchestrate real harmony on the global theater. And for the average citizen locked in the concentration camp called a nation state, it just looks like chaos based on the inadequate information they get through the news channels. But there's a great harmony going on behind the scenes that's being worked out. And that's partly what is meant by Lockdown Bob Rule, is the skill I have in orchestrating the effects of the language of man. And the language of man is everything we've invented, from clothing to New York City to Mao Zedong. So that is what we on the Secret Council 10 do in tetrad management, and it includes the basic...
I'm sorry, could you say that again, please? Could you repeat that, please?
The whole thing?
No, just the last 10 seconds or so.
Yeah, doing tetrad management, it includes the tetrad process of knowing that every artifact enhances a certain bias in the users of that artifact's environment, it obsolesces a previous environment, it retrieves characteristics of older media environments from way back. For example, in the 20th century, we've retrieved an obsession with the occult under electric conditions and all the paraphernalia that comes with the occult legacy. That is retrieved in the 20th century, but the very present environment that we've enhanced and we're doing a tetrad on, when it's overused, it flips into opposite characteristics and effects than was intended by it. That is the basic principle. And I understand that in Mondo 2000, Arthur Croker, who was featured in my book, Phatic Communion with Bob Dobbs, talks about the tetrad in an article written by him.
Well, you know, you have brought up that old canard, Johnny Can't Read. Well, it seems more and more under electric conditions that Johnny can't think either.
That's right. And William Irwin Thompson explains in he's a closet McLuhanite, and he is a McLuhanite for people who know about McLuhan, but as he's explained to me, Americans don't know much about McLuhan, or they haven't in the 80s, only Canadians.
Well, Americans don't seem to know much about anything.
Yeah, and he explained in his charts under what he calls the 20th century process of planetization that the victim of that is mind. And that is a complementary statement to McLuhan's point that cultures are business or insights are cliche and turned over every day. So, yes, the old organization of the mind and the bias of it to categorize is obsolete. People today don't know how to use their minds in perceptual ways without falling back into obsolete categorization. They've got to learn how to swim with the natural perceptions of their mind without categorization. And that's very hard to do. But a guide to that is Finnegan's Wake.
Well, I want to go back to this idea that progressives don't have a chance and conservatism is inevitable under electric conditions, if I got you right on that.
Yeah, I would. Conservatives have been inevitable in the last 15 years. Now, even they are not going to be able to keep up with the mood mud effect of television, computers, and satellites, especially on a new post-electric bunch of Johnnies who don't have a mind and can't read. And they won't even respond to the conservative image. So we have an essence of anarchy now, and I think that the rap culture expresses the return of the mouth, the old organ of the mouth of the body, which is the body itself doesn't exist anymore. It's splayed against the mediascape. But the mouth has returned in various forms, from rap culture to Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, with archetypal intensity. And I think that's the closest that people, young people today can respond to the electric effect is to wake up a mouth.
Well, wait a minute. Maybe progressives do have a chance now if they can just, at least maybe the ones who are tuned into this.
That they can listen, did you say?
No, that they have a chance. Maybe we can finally overtake the conservatives for once in our lifetime.
Yes, but what are you going to implement if you take over? You see, everything's disappeared, so there is no ground for implementing any kind of program.
Well, that doesn't stop the conservatives.
Yeah, but they aren't having any influence on people's lives. The conservatives like to retrieve the American image, the small town, maybe literate environment. They aren't having no success with the generations that are coming up who don't respond to books at all. They do respond to print on computer screens, and that's creating another kind of global culture. They're not going to think in terms of small town or national entities.
Well, explain away then, or explain to me the success of that windbag Rush Limbaugh.
I just said is that the mouth is retrieved. Since there is basically an oral characteristic to the electric environment versus the visual bias, which emphasized the eye in the Gutenberg galaxy, in the Marconi galaxy, which we're in now, the closest human organ that responds to life at the speed of light and operates in the resonant reality of electric conditions is the mouth in speech. And the mouth is, if you look at Time magazine November 1st, you have on the cover Stern and Rush Limbaugh. Inside, they just show their mouths and a quote from each of them. So the mouth is the most powerful retrievable, and this is a homeopathic retrievable of the organ of the mouth, is the most dominant medium for young people and even older radio-conditioned people who gravitate towards Limbaugh. TV people gravitate towards the TV generation of the 60s, gravitate towards Howard Stern, and the young people gravitate to the oral culture coming out of rap. And one particular part of the rap culture is that the young African Americans are always gesturing and covering up their penis. You ever notice they're always holding their crotch? Now that's because the African American is...
Well, what about athletes too?
Yeah, is brought up more in a matriarchal culture than the whites were brought up in a patriarchal culture, and the hidden unconscious tribal memory of a matriarchal culture, as expressed in William Irwin Thompson's book, The Time Falling Bodies Take Delight, is the myth of the amputated phallus in the ancient matriarchal sacrificial religions and rituals where they would amputate the phallus of the corn god, and this is expressed in the myth of Isis and Osiris. Because the electric environment is post any kind of cultural situation of matriarchal or patriarchal, it threatens and brings out the most instinctive reflex. And so in the oral culture of and matriarchal culture of the African-American, the young men are instantly, as they grow up, paranoid of having their phallus chopped off. And that's why they gesture towards it all the time and kind of protect it. And on top of that, since there's no privacy in the electric culture, they don't mind displaying it. So there's a hidden ground of a particular tribal heritage being magnified and amplified by the electric transparency.
I want to get back to another this conservative progressive point here,
yes.
Because I'm always arguing about this, especially with some of my fellow, well, we call ourselves the sanity wing of the socialist left in America, what's left of us. And, well, speaking of mouths, how can you deal with the fact that here's a guy named Rush Limbaugh who's enormously successful because he's practically all mouth. Well, how come someone like Bill Mitchell, who is an equally big mouth, is not as successful as a Rush Limbaugh?
Well, because Rush Limbaugh has the right name. The American 20th century was a kinetic culture enhanced by the movie, car, and radio. But especially the American dreams go on the open road. And that's to get in your car and experience the life of a movie, an outer trip. So because his name has the kinetic space, and because kinetic space is obsolesced by tactile space, which is the mixed corporate media electric satellite complex we're in, a tactile vortex, then the American unconscious, the social unconscious of America, which has a kinetic bias, tries to retrieve the kinetic space, which is put into limbo, to use a religious term. It's in abeyance, in suspended obsolescence, and kinetic space rushes to retrieve itself in this failed or vacuum of a limbo. So Rush is kinetic space rushing to overcome the limbo. So you got to have the right name. That's first. The next thing is that Bill isn't using the radio medium on a mass level. And if he had, say, shown up in Sacramento in 1986 and put on a conservative talk show, he would have been hoiked up. Roger Ailes would have come in, put him on to counter the effect of software communism of the late 80s. And he would have got onto the medium in New York on radio. It would have sped up because the older radio generation is desiring a retrieval of the radio sensibility. That is their sense of intimacy through the radio medium as opposed to TV. And if he had the right name, he would have become Rush Limbaugh. In other words, in Tetrad management, it was necessary to retrieve the radio environment with a conservative kinetic content at that point in the late 80s to bounce off the incredible implosion of TVs and satellites that was coming, symbolized by the collapse of the Berlin Wall. So if Bill Mitchell had those requirements and showed up at the right time, it would have happened, but he can't do it now.
Well, here, I'm not going to drop this now. See, I want to change people and influence thought, and I think I'm pretty good at doing it. So what advice, how can I get hold of people's minds and change them, since I'm on the progressive left? Maybe it's my definition of what progressivism is.
Well, the first thing you do to change people's minds, since under electric conditions they can't have a mind, and since it's hard to have any programs, you turn off the ground that they are being influenced by. You can't influence them conceptually. You can't influence them socially. But you can influence them organically by turning off television. If you turn off the television environment and get a collectivity to agree to that, that would have an incredible effect on people. Then it would be your skill after that to orchestrate the chaos that would come from that. That's about the only way you could measure change on this level we're in now. Any other change is personal. Now, also, you're a discarnate, electrically autonomous person who has access to the whole planet under electric conditions. And you can interact personally through computer networks, but you're exchanging ideas, and that can give you the illusion of influencing somebody. But there's no way on the mixed corporate media level that you can have a change, because they're the only occupants, the mixed corporate media, of the global theater.
Well, this isn't mixed corporate media.
You can't even arrive at a holeopathic retrieval level.
Wait a minute.
Rush Limbaugh is a holeopathic retrieval. He doesn't really have any influence, but he does provide the necessary resonance through the radio medium to balance off the effect of TV and computers.
Well, wait a minute.
Who can be projected at 7 million watts around the planet to over 650 stations, and everybody willingly identifies with him who are of that ilk.
Well, wait a minute. What am I doing here on this radio station, then?
You're masturbating.
Well, what's Rush Limbaugh doing on radio?
He's masturbating, but he is representative of a need. Now, your need is tinier. Now, here's another point of the electric environment. Small is not less potent than big, and it's like the chaos dynamics theory. A little butterfly in Japan could cause a storm and burn down Laguna Beach, right?
Okay.
So you can have an effect on that level, and the only thing going for you to really do that right now is that featuring me on your show. That gives you an advantage. But anybody on KPFK can affect people, but you need to be in the tetrad management position of a Secret Council 10 to monitor which little butterfly from which little radio station is going to have an effect. There are many homeopathic, tiny entities like yourself doing what you do on media. And you can't gauge the effects of what you're doing. So you can't assume you're not having an effect. But you have to be realistic that those effects are probably not measurable. And so the only effects you can study are the mixed corporate media's interaction.
Well, we're beginning to get a few interested listeners because the switchboard's beginning to light up. And I do want to say that after I ask one more question and Bob explains it in hopefully less than an hour, we'll be taking some
phone calls. Do you want to have an effect?
Oh, yeah.
Well, which way would you take it? What do you want to achieve that hasn't been done?
Well, Johnny can't think. That's America is in a state of constant denial, total denial.
But are you agreeing with me that thinking is categorization, and maybe categorization is not a practical process today?
Well, you don't have to be wedded to the categorization.
I think people think daily, but it's a pressure, a psychic pressure on them. Their minds are going almost too much. They don't. It's like running on empty in a car.
Well, that's not my problem. I mean, I thrive in this kind of environment. I don't know why other people can't.
Well, they are. It's just that you seem to identify with certain kind of thoughts that people reflect back to you.
No, we're talking about the electric environment. To me, it's a tool. It's a means to an end. And a lot of people, to them, it's the end itself.
Yeah. The environment or thinking?
The environment, the electric environment. They seem overwhelmed by it. And, well, why am I not overwhelmed by it?
Well, you may be because you refuse to recognize how obsolete and how puny you are. You think you are having an influence there.
Well, I'm never gonna give in to them.
Equally balance wise, how tiny of an influence you're having.
Well, even Rush Limbaugh was small at one time.
Yes, and even he feels that he's not having an effect and he won't have an effect. And he bemoans on the show how America is for the health reform package of Hillary and Bill and all that stuff. He feels, you know, he's not getting his point across, and the polls defeat his goal. So he's going to have to deal with the fact he's just one particle in this quantum physics life of mixed corporate media.
Okay, I got one more question, and we are beginning to get some listeners. We will be taking your phone calls. I'm David Porter speaking with Bob Dobbs, and this is KPFK Los Angeles. Now, what do you think of this guy Arthur Croker, who claims to be the McLuhan of the 1990s?
Does he claim that?
Yes.
Or is this something that Jared Fialka mentioned?
Well, I never reveal my sources.
Well, Croker, you see, Emphatic Communion, my book, lays out the pattern of the last 40 years. LaRouche was the important archetype of the 50s sensibility. McLuhan was the important archetype and resonant cliche for the 60s sensibility. William Irwin Thompson mirrored and echoed the 70s. Croker mirrored and emphasized the effects of the hologram reality laid out in my chart in the 80s. Now, the 90s is me. Now, Croker, if he's starting to have some prominence, it is because he's obsolete, and he works for people. He gives them a necessary anesthetic response. But the hidden ground is me. So if anybody's going to be the McLuhan of the 90s, it's me, and I will be the anti-McLuhan because McLuhan is obsolete. Because McLuhan's obsolete, he works for people. So maybe Croker, as a McLuhan expert, will surface for a while. But look for the flip, and that's where I am.
Okay, well, let's take our first caller. You've been very patient, and you're on the air.
Morning.
Morning.
Morning. Do you work for yourself, right?
No. I've never had to work. I was born into wealth.
Oh, very good. Very good. Very fortunate. Very fortunate.
Yes. Well, I still had to do a lot of work. There are obligations when you're born into the wealthy class,
uh-huh.
And I had to do a lot of dirty work.
Oh, right.
But now I'm in a position to make up for that.
What makes it dirty work?
Well, I had to assassinate people. I had to money launder.
Uh-huh.
As I've said on previous shows, I was involved in the assassination of JFK, Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. I did much in the Third World, what's called the Third World. I had a very... the problem with being wealthy in the 20th century is that you have incredible responsibilities dumped on you because wealth is obsolete by the software communism of the electric environment.
Right.
And therefore, we try to preserve the value of the gold-based medium
that. There's no value in gold, then?
No, not compared to people's experience. The gold economy and the money economy and the wealth built up in banks is a medium that came out of the Gutenberg galaxy, starting with the Fugger newsletter and the Turn and Taxes postal system, which was the intelligence control of that 400 years ago. Taking from that, that's a medium that's here 400 years. That still is
there
in terms of people's
collective psyche. That's a Western medium, correct?
It has to be managed.
It's a Western medium, correct?
Yes.
I see, for European origins, correct?
Yes.
Ah, I understand. And that is within all the other mediums that are surfacing today. You mean just today, these mediums that just all of a sudden are surfacing? Well, the electric environment retrieves tribal values, tribal sensibilities, so you have great sense of pride in one's tribal heritage expressed in all the third world cultures, including the Native American culture.
There's no transcending that, then?
The only transcendence of the interplay of that confusion is the electric autonomy that every individual on this planet, 5 billion of us, have in relation to that. We are satellited and satellized minds. We are floating around the interpenetration of the media.
Well,
and that's the hidden
have,
ground
yes.
of Madonna and any homeopathic retrieval from Howard Stern to Rush Limbaugh. They express individual electric autonomy mouthing off at the whole mixed media interplay.
But
and we all have that.
This, they will only be within this plane for X amount of time.
Who will only be?
The people you just mentioned.
Yeah, they are transient. There will be new moon muds as a result of the mixed corporate media interplay.
Are we not all transient?
Yes, we all are, but I mean, in terms of what we know and what we recognize, the media images is what's reflected back to us. They are transient because they are figures for the ground of the new mood muds. So there'll be new figures.
Yes.
I'll probably even be one at some point.
Well, your newspeak is quite intriguing. It is especially based in the Western belief and culture.
No. That's only because I'm using English in this particular audience,
right.
And English evokes that Western background. I can speak many languages,
right.
And also nonverbal languages in
very
my
good.
Role as Tetrad manager.
Yes, I see. I know what you. I understand your meaning. I understand your verbalization.
Thank you
very well. So you believe all old aspects, complete old writings, old archaic beliefs, and everyone that's ever been exposed to us as a entity are completely worthless, or they are a cumulation of what is happening right now.
They are worthless in the sense they are obsolete. They have no real power other than providing an anesthetic to people who need on a tribal level to feel some kind of coherency and sense of community. But if they look, the closer they look at the present day reality, they have no force, no impact, and will fall away.
Oh.
If we turned off the electric environment, they would come back and have real force.
Well, we that's the will. Is it not?
That nostalgic retrieval is the will?
Yes.
Yes, it's an anthropomorphic will. Now, what will we're unconscious of, and Nietzsche began to talk about this, is the will that we're using radio and telephone right now. We have a will to use this environment. So we have to recognize the disservices and services of the medium you and I are talking on right now.
Yes.
That's an unconscious will.
Yes. It is also nature. It is also natural.
That's right. It's man-made nature, but it has the force and metaphor of original nature.
Yes, but everything has always been here. Everything, even man-made, is natural.
Well, maybe in Atlantis or maybe in previous cultures they had an environment like ours. But maybe we can suspect that they never had the interplay of different cultures and media like we do today. That may be new.
It
could be new.
Yes.
And that could be the root of our confusion.
Yes, but the only reason that this has come to this acme is because there are so many people populating this surface of this Earth. And if we believe we can hold this Earth, then we are lost.
That's right.
No one can hold this Earth.
That's right. And I call that software communism.
Yes. And software communism is existent throughout the planet.
That's right. That's the electric autonomous individual lives in a state of software communism.
I see. So then the only attainment or returning to attainment can be to completely eliminate the electric influences within our own personal everyday existence.
That is one half of the solution. The other
half
is to promote, and I call it the Bob Mandy Ecology Program, is
right.
to respond to every media poll with the response, every citizen did this, with the response of turn off TV, that Dan Rather and Brokaw would have to talk about this every day, about how the people don't like the fact they are there on the media.
Right.
And we provide that as content for them. They probably could make it an issue, but it would be a Chinese water torture like any issue when it becomes dominant in the major media. And that's the closest we can come to maybe pretending we're zombies for the Bob cult and sort of satirically getting back at them because we know content's obsolete. Let's force them to have the same content every day so they get real bored in their own jobs.
Do you believe in compassionate aspects to other beings of our own ilk? Of course.
Yes, and moderation in oneself and moderation towards the other being.
Yeah. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't believe that.
Yes, very good. It's knowing when to stop is
the whole point. Yep.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And we're living in an environment that appears like a simulation. It's unstoppable, and that'll drive people crazy.
Well, let's go on to another caller.
Thank you. Thank you. You're welcome.
And you're on the air. Thank you for being so patient.
Thank you. You know, I'm listening to this fella jump on McLuhan, and as a nitty gritty street person and an outsider of the main establishment, I'm wondering, is he condemning that kind of consciousness where you get it from, how would you say, from a subsurface or a subcultural places, you know, to hear him to pan a person like Marshall McLuhan, it makes him think he's on Philip Wiley's case, he's on Vance Packer's case, you know, some places inductive and deductive consciousness is not semantics like that Oriental teacher did up there in Frisco with the Frisco school, right? What's, I forget his name, but anyway, I'm wondering where is the street consciousness? Where is the how would you say the check and balances for the establishment that is pop art?
Okay, that's a good question. The thing is I worked with McLuhan in the 50s, and many people don't know that Marsh McLuhan is a Manipian satirist. He had a basic allegiance to the street. Now, he didn't believe the medium was the message. He believed that the knowledge and technologies of the 20th century were based on a hidden assumption of the medium as the message. It began with theory, Heisenberg's principle. It was developed, if you read John Brockman's book, Einstein, Gertrude Stein, Wittgenstein, and Frankenstein, he outlines the hidden principle that technologies condition the thinking of people and that the main assumption in 20th century science is the medium as a message. Now, Marshall knew that, and he mirrored and echoed back that idea, the medium as a message, to the establishment, saying, this is what you secretly use, this is the principle how you run the 20th century, and I'm going to whistleblow and expose you. So he pretended academically and as a kind of scientist to act out the meaning of the medium as a message as if he believed it. But you have to remember that there was no Marshall in anything that he wrote, that he knew all media were basically holograms and had no real substance anymore under satellite conditions. So there's no Marshall in his writings. Marshall was a devout Catholic, a person who went to Mass every day. His public image was going to be used by the world government. He knew that. And so he just used their principles, the medium as a message, and worked with it and tried to make people aware of it. Now, the establishment doesn't point this out, the satirical aims of Marshall McLuhan. And if you want to be proven of this point, you read Letters of Marshall McLuhan, the June 22nd, 1951 letter to Ezra Pound, where he said, I'm an intellectual thug. I've been gathering information for 20 years, and I intend to use it.
You know, Nathan, you kind of gave me an explanation of why such progressive people like Jane Fonda and the likes who have went underground or have subsurface or have remained silent, you give me and wrap around and those kinds, you give me the impression or the reasoning why they have become quiet, because they have no they don't even have KPFK to be so peace to you, man.
Yeah, they believe in their blooming world.
Peace to you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I think that was Zacarito. And we have no calls right now. You can call in at 818-985-5735. I'm David Porter, and speaking with me discarnately is the voice of Bob Dobbs.
And yeah, I'd like to thank Monk Magazine for pointing me out as a benefit for L.A. citizens, for what are the values they illustrate in their new special issue in L.A. is that Bob Dobbs lives there. I don't know where they get that idea. I don't live there. But it's nice that they mentioned that I might have.
Well, I think they don't realize that you really don't exist. You're just a voice in the electronic media.
I'm not even that. I'm in the corporate media environment itself.
Okay, well, we got it. We got another sucker. I mean, another caller here. Hold on. You're on the air.
Would you ask Mr. Dobbs to rerun that bit about
Isis and Osiris and black people grabbing that cross. I just wanted to get that the book that he mentioned.
Okay, Will. The book is The Time Falling Bodies. What is it, Dave? The Time Falling Bodies. Oh, yeah. The Time Falling Bodies Take to Light by William Irwin Thompson. It came out in 1981, where he shows the meaning of the myth of Isis and Osiris. And in the myth, Seth, Isis's brother, representing the matriarchal power, tried to kill Osiris, who was rising as the new patriarchal figure. And when he cut up his body and flung it into the river, Isis then tried to retrieve the parts, and she couldn't find the penis. And so then she did something with the phallus, and that had a lot of symbolic meaning at that time. But there is a common ritual in those days of matriarchal tribal cultures where they would sacrifice the male god. He was called the corn god every season, every year, you know, in the spring. And so the chopping off of the penis as part of the sacrifice is a big embed in pre-literate, pre-westernized cultures. And I think the electric environment favors matriarchal sensibility, favors the feminine principle in our nostalgic memory of anthropomorphic levels, so that the electric environment makes women seem stronger as we move into the 21st century, and the matriarchal cultures, like the African-American one, there the young men would have a stronger resonant fear of the female image because it's enhanced by the electric environment, so they quite obviously are always protecting their crotch.
That kind of sounds kind of strange and racist to me.
I don't mean that as a judgment. It's just that I don't see white kids or heavy metal people grabbing their crotch as the black kids do as a reflex gesture. They may not even mean that. You know, they don't mean it that way. But I'm analyzing it from historical knowledge of why there is a fear of phallus amputation in our time.
Bob.
Well, when you say that, I think about W.E.B. Du Bois talking about, how white people were castrating black people after after many lynchings in the South, and how he would walk down the street and see the fingers and the,
yep,
and the phalluses of black people in meat markets and, you know, and in white butcher shops. And I just wonder, you know.
No, that's a valid point. You see, you have to understand how there's so many audiences in the electric environment looking at each other. And so the black kids may interpret that's their mirror image they're doing in relation to the local white culture in America. But when you think of the fact that the rap culture is projected to Saudi Arabians, to Chinese, all over the world, those cultures are projecting their own content into the image. And so I try to find the most broad principle that transcends particular cultural interpretations. So I'm using this ancient initiatory and Egyptian archetype. And there's a black element to that, too, since the Egyptians were influenced by the African culture south of it, the Ethiopian culture. So there's where you try to communicate when you're Bob Dobbs on a pun level, a cross-cultural pun. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I tried listening to Rush Limbaugh once, and it seemed like he must have heard me on KPFK or something, and he started talking that weird stuff about, encouraging, you know, not to listen and all that. I just wonder if he has some kind of intelligence network that, guides his humor and what he says.
Well, he certainly does. And even if he didn't intend that himself and thinks he doesn't, because he's a holeopathic retrieval, a small entity being broadcast over the whole planet, and therefore influencing, like John F. K., his televised image influenced the ancient gold-backed intelligence industrial establishment, he is going to be interfacing with that, and they will respond. They will respond, and they will infiltrate and use his entertainment, his show, in the way they think they can control it. But they won't have total control because his image is being broadcast in relation to other cultures beyond anybody's ability to understand the effects.
Well, it looks like I see Rush Limbaugh and that other guy, Howard Stern, because I sit up in class and listen to those kids, laud him to high, heaven. And it just looks like to me that the intelligence community, George Bush and Skull and Bones, all that are
the 322 Club.
As a way of controlling and projecting this republicanism globally.
think in anthropomorphic terms. They think American culture can be the final content around the planet. They don't know that there is no American culture outside of America. Even for Canadians, when they watch a Disney movie, it's a Canadian Disney movie because they're projecting their own local content. So the Republicans represent, and the George Bush gang represented the car, movie, radio culture, those media, they're appendages of that oil consciousness, which is I call kinetic space, and it will sort of appear all over the planet because all cultures will grab onto it as nostalgic sensory bias of kinetic space in response to the acultural and know-nothing reality of tactile space. So there's a great favoritism for that American kinetic space and the power of Rush Limbaugh. But I tell you, that will flip as we get nanoized and get digitalized and become more invisible with the new virtual reality technologies and the new digitalized operations. That will affect culture all the way through. Now, the moral problem for a citizen, since I may be talking about trends for a hundred-year trend, is what are you going to do within your 50-year or 70-year lifetime in response to that? Because you've got a trend that you're not going to be able to buck. That's our problem.
Well, now, wait a minute, Bob. Look, we've got a full switchboard here, okay. And I really want to go on to some more callers.
I wish you'd say a few words about anarchy and as opposed to communism. I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Okay, also, I was going to add, we do have a full switchboard. It's amazing. I've never seen the entire thing lit up. I was just going to say, you were talking about how in the black culture, they're afraid of the castration and mutilation. Well, I was just going to add facetiously that in a white culture, young men are taught that they have no phallus. But anyway, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
I've got a question. In your ken, in your intellectual ken, do you include Terence McKenna? And if so, how does he fit?
Terence McKenna is a holopathic retrieval of Tim Leary and Gary Snyder. And he's smart enough to use McLuhan, but he uses McLuhan's insights in reference to language only to verbal and oral language. He actually is another retrieval on the oral bias of our time. He doesn't talk about the mixed corporate media language, which creates a psychedelic effect beyond his, say, preference for natural psychedelics. So Terence McKenna is a figure for a ground. I'm the ground. And I will just, you respond to that. That's all I'll say right now. What do you say to that?
Well, I meant it a bit more personally. For instance, McKenna and Leary know one another.
And they both promote McLuhan now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they've both been doing it for years.
Well, no, Tim Leary, I've been involved with Tim Leary this past year when I passed through L.A., and he, I discussed with him, I said, you did not talk about McLuhan in the late 70s, early 80s. What did it? The Berlin Wall going down? And he said, yes. Only the last couple of years has he reappraised McLuhan. But again, he's falling into the trap of the world government boys who want to promote a global village situation.
Well,
and McLuhan is the archetype of that. He'll be like Freud. But look at Time magazine this week. Freud is gone. He's obsolete. Well, the McLuhan image of the global village will become obsolete in the next 30 years. And McLuhan himself is not part of that. He advocated and talked about the global theater. And Tim Leary, and I scolded Tim Leary for this, he did not know that. And neither does Terence McKenna.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you go.
What I meant was on a more personal level. Leary knew McLuhan and
yes.
met back in the 60s.
Yeah, he has an autographed copy of the rare McLuhan book, Take Today the Executive as Dropout, in his library. Signed by Mrs. McLuhan, which was given to him in the 80s. He did not know about that book, and he should have been the 70s.
Kind of personal
but yes,
level,
they related.
I'm acquainted with McKenna.
Was McLuhan?
No, you.
Yes, I was involved with McLuhan in the 50s. I helped him make discoveries at the Exploration Symposium with Ted Carpenter in the 50s.
McKenna, Bob.
You're not quite getting it, Bob. In other words, I'm wondering, in your ken, obviously you've included McKenna intellectually in your ken.
Oh, I have not. I'm an anti-environment to Terence McKenna. I mean, in that sense, Roy of Hollywood should be playing these shows to balance off the disservice that he created by making Terence McKenna popular.
Well,
it was
does.
A somnambulistic reflex to the software communist, discarnate, archaic retrieval, paleolithic retrieval we're in, where the kids naturally go for drugs no matter what, and every generation under TV conditions will. McKenna is just riding on that fad.
Mm-hmm. I sort of meant, did you know Terence, have you ever hung out with him?
And he doesn't know I have, but I have.
I see. Well, that's it. Now, the other question I had was kind of an aesthetic hit. I get from both you and Terence a similar aesthetic feeling. And I'm wondering if you yourself have run down what that might be. In other words, have you analyzed your own effect on other people aesthetically?
Yes, that's my job in the Secret Council of Ten, is to study the effects of myself as I went public since 1988. Mm-hmm. I was not public before then. But I would say, could you describe what aspect of the aesthetic you mean? Because I have a lot of levels.
Well, I have
on.
In my own notion, as you were talking, and I equated it also with Terrence's aesthetic effect on me, an analog or an analogy that seems to me, came to me real quick. And I'm just wondering if you, as you say, have studied your own effect on people. I wondered if you had that same analogy, and I'll...
What is that analogy?
Saying what I came up with, I'm asking you what you have come up with, and I'll see if mine matches yours.
Oh, okay. Well, do a predictive. You're doing a predictive thing here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. The analogy of... Is he going to hang up?
No.
Okay.
That's just
the analogy of me is understanding the process of analogy itself, how one metaphorifies, how one makes metaphor in consciousness, how consciousness is a metaphor, and... Therefore, I'm taking perceptual apparatus, our senses, as well as our conceptual apparatus, as a metaphor of each other. It's the Thomas Aquinas principle that consciousness or metaphor is a ratio of proportions among proportions.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So I'm metaphorizing the process of metaphor today, and the most dominant metaphors today are our media systems, like television is an extension of the central nervous system. That's a metaphor. So I'm a mixed corporate media metaphor of the operation of the modern metaphors.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not quite...
Well, maybe it is. Well, say what yours is, and then maybe
on,
I can just translate.
In other words, what I was wondering is, in your analysis of your own effect on other people, have you come up with a metaphor, i.e., my rap, if you will, affects Davey, which is me.
Yeah.
Like a blank. That's
okay.
What I mean. Maybe
I would say that my rap...
Like a simile, maybe a better,
right.
Better note.
Not so wordy, just one
how,
word.
How aesthetically do you perceive yourself affecting me?
Okay, I consider myself a media virus, but not just a cancer virus, but also a positive nutrition. And I think the more success I have in giving you health, then the more diseased I become. So
well,
I have
I'll
to
tell
balance
you what, I'll
that
leave
by
you
making
with this
myself give you
my
bad diseases to make
you
me healthier. It's a complementary systole-diastole situation.
I'm sorry?
It's a complementary systole-diastole, like when the heart
oh,
is
sure,
taking in blood, it's pumping out.
But what I'm saying is I'll leave you with this word, that my notion was that both you and Terrence affect me as abstract painting does.
Yeah, that's okay.
See, that's it. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, let's try and get these calls shorter. And you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
I just want to tell you, I don't want to argue with this Dobbs fellow. I never heard of him before, and I hope I never hear from him again. I just want to state what I think. I think he, like Bill Buckley, have prostituted their ability to work with words on a fast pace that I cannot even argue with because I cannot think that fast. But I would say that with corporate America owning most of the radio stations, I think that's why Rush Limbaugh, whom I have never heard except once on a clip from KPFK, and I don't even know who Howard Stern is, I think they're on radio because of the powers that be that can afford to put them on. And if KPFK could afford more than six stations across corporate America, we would be hearing more from those who speak on KPFK, where I spend all my time when I want to listen to talk shows, in addition to Frank Sontag on KLOS and Michael Benner on KLFX.
Well, the user is
well,
the
content. I think...
And I agree with you completely. And what you're hearing from me today is just one part of me, the mouth version. You read my liner notes or read my book, you'll get the visual space version. So I don't think you're perceiving me comprehensively. And on top of that, you are inside the satellite environment, and that's what I'm mirroring.
I think we just had a call from somebody who is overwhelmed by the electric environment.
Yes.
Unlike myself, of course.
In other words, someone who really needs this show.
Yes. Okay, you're on the air.
Hello. Yes. Is there a relationship between Ezra Pound, Lorena Bobbitt, and Jack Kevorkian?
Yes. Ezra Pound understood the discarnate effect of the radio environment. He knew that meaning was no longer translated in verbal language, and you can see that in his writings in the 30s. Bobbitt, and language, you could say, is presented in the West, is a patriarchal medium. And Bobbitt was attacked by someone who cut off his patriarchal oral medium, the phallus. All right, so he was a victim of what Ezra Pound was worried about, and Kevorkian knows that most people consider their minds as the key part of their bodies in terms of their soul, and that has been amputated. We can't have minds, so the mind equals the phallus equals language. They all are complaining and responding to the discarnate effect of the electric media in our time.
Yes, and Jack Kevorkian, I guess he's... How does he fit into the patriarchy?
Okay, he is a threat to people because he wants... Suicide is the last gasp of narcissists. Echo is the electric nymph, the oral retrieval of the feminine principle, the feminine, which principle is obsolete itself, but it appears for anthropomorphic realities to be stronger. So Echo, dealing with narcissists, tries to escape of the swallowing by Echo, so kills himself. So Kevorkian is riding on the assumption that we can go into the astral plane or survive physical pain. So he sees the body as not a moral force anymore. In that sense, he's reacting to the discarnate electric effect.
Now, why would the paternal culture that we have celebrate Lorena Bobbitt and at least broadcast what she's done? Is that a sense of suicide that the paternal culture has? They want to extinguish themselves?
Yeah, you can mostly look at news. Any news item that becomes a big story the last 30, 40 years is an expression of a colossal collective preference of the mood mud of our time. In other words, for the next 6 months, there will be certain news stories that will rise up, and you can say that they represent a hidden need for this six-month period, which will change 6 months after that into another mood mud. And so the common denominator of our time at this point is the woman as victim, say, over the last couple of years, from Anita Hill through all the other. And so the woman is getting her revenge. So I think that this will be strong for a while, but then we'll go into a new kind of weird news stories that reflects a new kind of aspect of the anthropomorphic male, female, whatever level, class warfare, whatever dialectic that we've had in history, that'll be a rearview mirror nostalgic conflict that we hook up. So the conflict of Echo versus narcissist is now having strong resonance with the power and appeal of the Bobbitt story. You see what I'm saying?
There's a synchronicity going on that's collective.
I beg your pardon?
There's a collective synchronicity going on.
That's right. And that is controlled by the characteristics of the media that the collectives use.
Uh-huh. Okay,
that's a figure-ground relationship. The figure is the news, the ground is the media we're using.
Okay, this is KPFK Los Angeles. I'm David Porter, and the program is Genesis of a Music. And this morning we're not having music. We're having a conversation with Bob Dobbs and callers, and you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I'd like to ask, he was talking about the different languages. The movie Free Willy, did you hear what it mean in Europe?
No, what did it do?
Okay, in Europe, they are protesting the movie. It starts next month out there, and because Willy in Europe means a private part for a man.
Yeah.
You know, so they kind of upset about the movie Free Willy. They don't think about the whale like we do. They think about their private part.
Yeah, so that means it's a European movie when it's in Europe. That's my point. The collective user is the content.
That's
they do
true.
Not see an American movie.
But anyway, what I want to ask two important questions. The violence that we're having out here, the black-on-black crime with the Crips and the Bloods.
Yep.
Okay. Is it any connection with the crime they're having in South Africa with the two tribes fighting amongst each other, one being funded by the white government, and it's continually black-on-black crime there? And when you think about the Bloods and the Crips here, it's the same identical thing, two black groups and black-on-black crime here. Do we have a connection somewhere with the African-American people here and the Africans in South Africa? And my second question, and I'll hang up for my answer, is in the 60s, we followed Martin Luther King, was like a leader for us. At the same time we was following Martin Luther King, all of a sudden, a militant group came in, the Black Panther Party, I think, which divided us into two different way of thinking. Most of the old people with Martin Luther King, and then we were like the militant, like, part. Now they're having a discussion about Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson. Is it the black people, are we looking for a leader somewhere? Do we have to have a leader? I think some people telling us about Farrakhan and Islam. Should we all come together, or are we trying to, if people trying to keep us apart, trying to tell us either follow Jesse Jackson or follow Farrakhan? Because if you think about it, Jesse Jackson, Farrakhan, Martin Luther King, and Malcolm X all was telling us to get our education and to learn how to live in society. But for some reason, we're splitting up into two different groups of African-American people, and it's something holding us to this separation. Why can't we all come together as one people and not split up as a group?
Okay, sounds, I can answer, like, that.
Thank you.
Sounds to me sort of like Cain and Abel.
Okay, that's an archetypal thing. Now, we have to look at the context we're in. If we have disappeared and all anthropomorphic, that means human beings as we look, like men, women, dogs, children, how human beings traditionally see their reality. If it's in, swallowed up inside a swirl, a maelstrom, a vortex of satellite, TV, computer bombardment, then we can't see a constant anthropomorphic human-scale image. Therefore, that's going to affect all cultures over the whole planet. And you have a dialectic of exploding and imploding, or becoming unified and fragmenting. Now, these two processes are going on at the same time, because to be unified or to be fragmented is to look at life on a human scale level, because in real reality, we have imploded like a supernova, if you want to use astronomical imagery. The whole human dimension has imploded and disappeared into the level of bosons, quarks, atomic, subatomic particles. So therefore, we've imploded that much, unified. We are unified, the whole planet. At the same time, the historical media, books, newspapers, media, writing, oral speech, bulldozers, skyscrapers, these media are imploding too, as the electric vortex disappears them. Now, what happens to a small culture like Africans in South Africa or here? You have first the old white patriarchal intelligence group, the George Bush group, and the associated historical baggage that comes out of British intelligence. You have them being paranoid to preserve their medium of gold. They will try to sow confusion and infiltrate groups and enhance fragmentation, which is a tragic thing, because they've already disappeared themselves. They don't realize they have nothing to preserve in their own wealth. On top of that, you have young people growing up in the 90s who don't know anything is real on the anthropomorphic human scale level. So they kill or are very violent with each other to find out if the other person is real. Real in the old human scale level.
That's kind of an extreme way to do it.
Beg your pardon?
I said it's kind of an extreme way to do it.
Oh, no, but think of Terrence McKenna, which he's right to say he doesn't advocate people taking chemical drugs like LSD, that you should be very ecological with your drug taking. But look at television. When you dump that into a population, you have turned that whole population into drug-crazed, LSD-soaked people. We are all stoned unbelievably. So how can we expect people to be rational? And they don't think in terms of, that's a silly way to do it. When you got young kids well into the 90s, well into this electronic vortex for 40 years, being born and being discarded from the earliest point of their existence, then they won't think the way you would think. They are reflecting out of sheer paranoia, which the central nervous system will do. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but I also have a thought before we go to the next caller that if we're all unified, maybe we just don't know what to do with it yet.
Well, we're all unified, and we don't know the languages to express it. And one of the languages is, if you turn off the electric environment, then we realize how non-unified we are, then you could turn back the electric environment on and enhance its services, its good points, and make everybody aware of the unity under electric conditions. Then if you did that on-off process, people would be more awake. So that's how you orchestrate the new languages. On top of that, we've got languages like you and I are using in the callers right now, English, which have an ancient heritage, which have a limitation, which have a certain benefit, but it's such an obsolete medium inside the new media swill. So we can't even be able to communicate that.
Well, I think when I brought up about an hour ago the idea that maybe I didn't need a media fast because I think this is something that I can use. I think maybe it's because in effect I've done that. I've turned the media off and then I've come back to it.
Yeah, you do it privately, but we've got to figure out how to do it collectively because the collectivities, the archetypes of the social unconscious is what I'm talking about. That's language, and we have had different kinds of language into the future and up to now. So that woman, that last caller, is talking about the fragmentation within the black culture, which will be an inevitable effect under TV conditions, tribal paranoia in relation to other tribes of other cultures, and then there's tribal paranoia within it, and then there's a discarnate electrically autonomous individual since the 60s, any person, H.R.R. Brown, Jesse Jackson, as a media image, they will compete with other electrically autonomous media images within their own culture. So you've got incredible conflict going on. And so you can bypass the mistakes of that situation by talking about the hidden ground, the biggest ground, which is the electric environment, which everybody can see now if you point it out to them.
Well,
so that woman gave a great litany and inventory of the disservices of every attempt to change or influence humanity within the black culture over the last 30 years and how they all came to naught. I mean, Martin Luther King did not foresee that even though civil rights would allow African Americans to get into the economic structure of America, that the economic structure he did not foresee would evaporate due to electric information moving money at the speed of light and evaporating money. So the economy has evaporated for everybody. He did not foresee that.
Well, I foresee another caller here, but I was just struck this last week, talk about electric environment. The Zapruder film is becoming sort of an icon in the most banal forms of pop culture.
That'll happen. Remember, news coverage gives coverage, but it also covers up. If you want to stop a story, you give it immense coverage. And the JFK thing now is something that ones who were involved in killing JFK need to market to make money to keep the old Gutenberg money system going.
Well, anyway, we have a caller on the air. Hello?
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 Yes, am I?
You're on.
Oh, okay. I actually wanted to revert back to one of the ideas you were talking earlier about the medium not being the message.
Yes.
And I've been observing, I'm a student of communication, I've been observing the development of the media merging into one apparatus and one machine, telephone, computer, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And the way that I was looking at it seems like in a very haptic or ergonomic in terms of all the senses.
Yeah, that's my word for haptic is tactile.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, go on.
I think the way the computers and television and the programs are being designed, they're becoming, in a way, ergonomic to all of our senses. And the way people interact with them, it's becoming a new form of language. And I was thinking if you thought this could be a new articulation of a message that it's not necessarily textual, but just a language of physical interaction and responding like some kid would be playing with a joystick, playing against a war machine or all these things that are in...
Well, that's what I mean by electric autonomy. As we miniaturize each technology and they get absorbed in smaller and smaller digital apparatus, and therefore it simulates the consciousness we have, which is multisensory and involves all the senses, as we simulate that through digitalized nanotechnologies that you're referring to, or CD-ROM, then it's almost like technologies were extended out of us in history. We amputated parts of our body, like the book was an extension of the eye, the plow was an extension of our fingers. As we extend them back out, we're now flipping, and we're now reabsorbing technologies through miniaturization back into our bodies. So we actually are going to retrieve our human-scale body in the long run as a divine archetype, and we will reabsorb all technologies and therefore have electric autonomy over the huge system effect that previous environments had on us. That's the good news about electric technology, is it will lead to electric autonomy. And I think the young generation, in their stress on individualism and imagination today and fantasy, is perceiving that there is a freedom that's coming due to the absorption, reabsorption of our technical environments. And it will simulate consciousness.
Simulate consciousness?
Yeah, the tactile or haptic qualities of consciousness, which is that you're brain is taking in eye, ear, nose, and the smell data and making it and replaying it through your brain as a coherent environment, a coherent reality that you're experiencing right now. we are going to simulate, we are going to mirror that and create a artificial tactility, an artificial tactile coherent form of consciousness. You know what I'm saying? Well, they call it virtual reality. That's what they're trying to do, approximate.
Where do you see Umberto Eco's semiotical layout falling into all of this, where the message seems to be something different?
Well, Umberto Eco is a failed McLuhanite. Now, Teleglobe gave him the McLuhan Award a few years ago in Canada. It's a Canadian operation. But Umberto Eco, if you want to read McLuhan's criticism of Eco, you read his last book, Laws of Media, The New Science. But on the surface, Umberto Eco is trying to take the French cultural bias, which is highly visual and alphabetic, plus the early 20th century kinetic environment of Paris. He's taking visual and kinetic space, calling it semiotics, and trying to mirror image the electric environment, which is not visual or kinetic. It is tactile. It involves all the senses. And the most successful expression of that was Finnegan's Wake. Now, you know all these guys, Baudrillard and Barthes and Derrida, they all try to understand Finnegan's Wake. And only Baudrillard acknowledges his debt to McLuhan. The rest of them didn't even know they were in debt to McLuhan, and they created the discipline, the confusion, the medieval retrieval of obscurantism called semiotics. And Eco is one of the popularizers of that. So these people are McLuhanite manqués. They're failed McLuhanites or failed Joyceans. They're not real Finnegans. And Finnegan's Wake is a hidden slogan of Bob's mediacology.
Don't you think it's a little bit of a contradiction or a paradox, this haptic language that doesn't seem to be connected to the rationalizing process?
You cannot encompass the haptic, tactile, multisensory involvement with an alphabetic or visual or, in quotes, rational left hemisphere image. It cannot be encompassed inside visual space. That's the problem. That's
how
Eco doesn't understand. He's trying to translate the electric environment back into literacy, and it can't be done. The only book that did that was Finnegan's Wake, and most people can't read Finnegan's Wake, or they don't think there's anything there to read. But if you understand that all that Finnegan's Wake is television mirrored to you, it's not really a book, then you begin to see how he pretty well successfully visualized the electric environment. But if you get into semantic meaning and semiotics, then you're immediately going to fail. So that's why it fails as a rationalization. Semiotics.
Let's go on to another caller. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and by the way, we're getting down to the wire. We've got about 13 minutes left.
Isn't it time we hear from Dave Worcester, or is he tuned out?
I guess he just tuned out. I mean,
okay.
He always calls up, and we haven't heard from Buckley yet.
Yes.
And this is KPFK.
What about Ned? We should hear from Ned and the bench. Where are their representatives?
We should hear from Bill Mitchell, too. And you're on the air.
Yes. What do you think about the language being found within the plants and how the government continues to make the plants illegal that contain this knowledge rather than what they shove into our bodies through the airwaves, through the television?
A hemp call.
Well, you've hit on a very important point. Now, you could be accused of being psychic because that's what I'm involved with today. My wife, Connie, is involved in lab work. And we are going to change medicine, and we're involved with a technology that we can't announce yet that is going to recognize the value and essence in herbs and plants that nobody ever recognized in the history of man or the history of women.
I think it has been recognized, and I think that's been part of the problem, because almost every culture throughout history then tries to persecute the people who have this understanding about the plants and make them illegal. I think even Channel 7's Monday and Tuesday's doing a thing about hemp again, and I think every psychoactive plant has been made illegal.
That's right. Now, that's visual space. It's war against tactile or natural space. That's a historical an effect of the phonetic alphabet and what we call patriarchal Western culture. Now, that's being subsumed, but we also are going to take the advantages of Western technology and the electric technologies that came out of the phonetic alphabet, and we are going to add a spin on the plants that is going to enhance their qualities.
Oh, no,
so I agree there is that ancient knowledge, but we are into a new dimension now, and that's partly of what Lockdown Bob Rule means, is that we're going to have Connie Dobbs' knowledge of plants is going to be made medicinal and retrieved in a wonderful new way. So you can be optimistic about that.
Caller, wait a minute. Caller.
Right?
Caller. I want to ask you, what's Channel 7 been saying about hemp?
They're saying, well, the hype on it is hemp is back again, and it's more dangerous than ever. Watch our show.
Oh, it is dangerous. It's very dangerous to the people who have an interest in Channel 7.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, there's going to be a protest out in front of Channel 7 on Monday
Good.
At noon.
Write
but
your
as
letters.
You, as you talk about the issue of hemp or plants in the media, supplement your protest with the slogan, Turn Off TV.
All
you
right.
must be aware of the hidden ground of media and what it's doing, and will actually frustrate your program to retrieve the ancient wisdom of plants.
Right. When you talk about doing the spin on the plants, though, you're not going to do any genetic engineering, though.
Oh, no. This is going to be something that's totally in harmony and resonance with the plant, and the inventor of it didn't even realize this till most recently, what he had discovered and how he found the essence of plants that we actually had never fully understood.
Okay.
When is this?
Give me the phone number, how to get hold of you.
You can call 310-306-7330, and you can leave any messages with Bob's answering service.
Right. Thanks.
When is this protest on Channel 7?
Well, they're going to air it on Monday and Tuesday, and so we're planning to have anybody who wants to go out there and speak for the plants and stand up for them to be out there on Prospect Avenue at 12 noon on Monday.
I would also advocate people flood their switchboards and write letters to them.
All right.
Okay. And
now Terrence McKenna has done good work with plants, and he'll be very interested in what Connie's going to be doing when he finds out about it.
Okay. And we got another caller, and you're on the air.
This is David Worcester.
No, thank you.
I've been trying to get in. You've got a very interesting show today.
Now, David, now we've only got about 10 minutes left, so use it all.
I do have a couple of things to talk about. I remember someone was referring to your structure. They were trying to figure out the Bob structure.
Yes.
And the way I see it in our long relationship is that with each person, there are identifications. For instance, you identify with your father, and so this is like a persona you take
Not
on, sort of a mask.
Yes.
The same way with your mother. And with brothers and sisters, and then on to teachers and religious orders, etc. Then after that, there are individual experiences that are filtered through all of this. That the forms of these persona and identifications that you have taken on begins to filter the information that comes in to use these as a comparison to decide whether to partake or not.
Yes.
It seems to me that in your progression to where you are now, that you act as a center which has traveled out on a ray of a particular persona, and that a fan of these persona is a form of identification. Each one of these identifications having looked deeply into integration, which is the special aspect. In other words, you haven't merely identified with a persona, but with personas that are deeply integrated.
Yeah, we call the holy offices, right.
But the process by which you, with your total recall, memory, and I know this personally because you have recalled things that I've told you 15 years ago, perfectly, even more than I would remember them unless I went through several stages. So I understand that you have that capacity.
Yes.
The phenomena, as I see it, is that you are integrating the various integrated persona and able to travel out on a line with anyone or jump from one to another with the proper proportion, but sometimes you can begin to radiate from the center out to all the rays one step at a time, and this is an absolutely phenomenal process, in which I appreciate more and more.
Thank you.
All right, now, the other thing, in a way, what it is, it's like a controlled schizophrenia of total integration.
Perfect.
Which sounds like it's a dichotomy, but I believe that this is the movement toward cosmic consciousness. And in a sense, it's a personal process without electronic media that is taking place haphazardly in the electronic media, in which everyone is a center looking at all of these processes. And where they are integrating in nature, it enhances our being and expands it, and we appreciate it. But when they're disintegrating in nature, it causes us great personal problems at various times. For instance, when we had the fires out here in California, and it was live television for such a long period of time, it was very, very incredible on the psyche of almost everybody I knew. I don't know how far it reached, but the phenomena of these fires that would not stop and kept popping up various places, and the wind, the more they would focus on a certain fire over the television, where there was something, says, well, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. All of a sudden, you would see it flare up because there was group consciousness watching this, and the talk about participatory television.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And as a communicator, there was no way in which I felt that I could ever call this attention to anybody that would be effective. There's no way. You just have to get out of the way and let it roll.
Right.
Dave.
All right.
Dave, just to let you know how far it reached, I was in Colorado that weekend, and everybody was watching them when they were in the hotels. Hello?
Yeah, you were saying everybody in Colorado was watching.
Everybody in our group that was in Colorado was watching them.
Hypnotized.
Incredible. At any rate...
Well, that's a very good metaphor of what I'm talking about, Dave. You're good
I know.
At that.
I know. Now I want to go to thought.
Yeah.
Which relates to this projection of looking at the fire and causing it to increase because of the collective minds. All right. And the phenomena of what has been happening for the last 6 weeks. Incidentally, I should tell you that for about 6 weeks, it has been almost impossible for me to stay inside my body, so to speak. It was like a projection, astral projection, except I did not realize it was happening for 3 weeks, right, which made me feel like I was very slow. What happened is I thought it was everything else. I went to doctors, I went to all kinds of things, and thinking I had all kinds of problems. And suddenly I realized I just couldn't stay in my body. Once I learned that that was the problem, I treated it such, and it took me about 5 days to ground.
All right, now how does this relate to what's been going on collectively?
Well, this actually started, the event that paralleled, and I didn't realize it was happening, I had to later see that it connected, was when they had the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, September 21st.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you see, no, that was October 3rd.
Oh, okay, but it started, you mean when Yeltsin started to make his move?
Yes.
Yeah.
From 3rd to the 5th in there.
Yeah.
And that was when this happened to me. I was doing something else. And I noticed that had happened, but then all of a sudden this other stuff, I don't want to go on too much on that. But anyway, about the time that I got myself together was when the firestorms happened.
Yes.
And I was sailing out again, and I thought, I took a lot of it very personal, and then I began to see that there was a profound effect that's happening in consciousness all across the country and across the world. But now I want to go back to thought, to talk about thought.
Well, we only have about 3 minutes, Dave.
All right. Let's hear about thought, though.
Let's
have one wrap up.
That thought moves at a vibration of a maximum of a million vibrations per second, including the highest forms of art and music. But the human organism is capable of experiencing up to once every 4 quadrillion of a second in the body. And so that these people who are concentrating on the significance of thought, which is in that narrow limitation,
yeah,
are that which is of the past. These people who are talking about the new systems coming out electronically are jumping into new levels of communication beyond the limits of former thought. Okay, I think that's enough for me today.
That's perfect. Thank you very much.
Well, I thought it would... We have maybe one short caller. You're on the air. Please make it quick.
Hi, I'm glad you took my call again. My 21-year-old son would like to know, it's the biggest drug dealer, black African-American young man, is going to be on Channel 7 Monday night on the program called Day One. His name is Freeway Rick. I'm sure you guys heard about him. All the dope houses, crack houses in L.A. had belonged to him. He's only 23. Why is this guy
getting up on this talk program called Day One. Why do they want to exploit him so much? He spent 6 years in prison. They've taken, like, all his money. He's made millions. You know, if you look at Day One, Monday night at 10 o'clock, you'll see it. Is there any way we could stop this Freeway Rick from going on that show? Why must they exploit him? On Donahue, they had black people up there rocking
cocaine.
Okay,
now, the way you do it
on
is
the air.
He created this television environment. It's an extension of us. We've got to take responsibility for it. As
he
long as we don't, then the content
show
becomes perverse like this. You get on there and say, turn off television. Let's have a 3-week fast, and we can stop the coverage of
we
that.
We should turn it off Monday night.
I know it's going to be on, but start doing it in the future. Prepare for future situations. Demand your media to turn off television.
But tell Channel...
locally or whatever level you can do.
Tell
Bob.
Tell Channel...
But that's the way you got to do it. That's our hidden ground. The reason kids are stoned on drugs is because TV will do that to a population that grows up on TV. Every generation is going to be worshiping Tim Leary and Terrence McKenna or the violent images of drug-taking forever, as long as we have this TV vortex.
Look, Bob, we only have like a half a minute now. Also, you've got to tell the TV stations that you're going to do this so they start talking about it.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
So anybody who wants to respond, call 310-306-7330.
That's 310-306-7330 in beautiful downtown Venice. Now, how about doing this something with Furry Lent on January 22nd, Bob?
Oh, you'd like to have it broadcast?
We're going
to
use part of it and bring
and
you
I'll
back on.
And I'll talk about it.
Yeah, and bring you back on January 22nd.
Okay, thanks a lot, Dave.
Okay, bye, Bob.
Bye.
That was Bob Dobbs. This is David Porter, and stay tuned for John Davis. I'll be back next week. Bill Mitchell will be here next week. And this is KPFK Los Angeles.
We're on the air.
Well, one of my friends told me he was real upset. Bob Dobbs, apparently in Just, had told, I don't know if it was on a tape you played or, you know, where it went down, that he was 71 years old and he was involved in killing some of the witness in the JFK assassination.
Yeah, Ned.
Well, I met Bob Dobbs at the beach. In fact, we were body surfing together. And
hey, he looks pretty good for 71, doesn't he?
Yeah, right. I'd say he looks about 34. You know, he's like a trim blonde beach boy. And this guy was 7 years old, maybe, when Dallas happened. And I know witnesses have been killed since. But he would have had to been like a little gangbanger working for the CIA, you know, on a tricycle almost.
Maybe he was.
I mean,
anyway,
Bob shouldn't kid. That's what I mean. I said he was kind of supercilious and stuff. And, you know, no, he's not. Well, I like him, but the idea of kind of a shock value and draw people into the video otherwise, and it's kind of way how you tap the tent. Kind of Bonham and Bailey kind of thing.
Anyway, well, we got to go, Bill. Thanks
okay
for being in.
Well, that's
we'll,
all.
We'll see
but,
you.
On that, yeah, I guess I'll be back next month. Happy Conservative Labor Day. And I'm in opposed to May Day, that is, and what it should have been. And, I don't know.
Hope to see you next month.
Anybody want
to
reach me? 380-8280, my pager. And I'm on TV Century on the 11th.
Okay.
At noon. And nothing else to report other than to tell yourself, people.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Stay tuned for Brian May.